The other driver I wanted to talk about was Carlos Sainz, who's driving for McLaren this season, finished one spot behind Lando Norris at the race in Abu Dhabi, and he will be lining up against Charles Leclerc. We've seen him as a fast and steady driver who's definitely shown moments of brilliance, but I'm not sure we have a real handle on how good he is. Do you have any guesses as to how he will perform at Ferrari when compared to Leclerc?
I think it's going to be a Hamilton-Bottas situation, and I think he'll be a nice, reliable number two, is the way I see it. I'm sure he doesn't see it that way, but I do.
Welcome to the Forza F1 podcast. I'm Aaron Jenkins, the editor of Forza Magazine, and with me, as always, is Andrew Frankel, Forza's Formula One editor. After a thrilling race in Sakhir, the race in Abu Dhabi would have had to have been pretty special to measure up, and it didn't. Abu Dhabi rarely delivers an interesting weekend, and this weekend's race was remarkable only for the fact that Red Bull's Max Verstappen qualified in pole and won the race, and that was likely only due to the fact that Mercedes had turned down its engine output after discovering reliability issues, and the fact that Lewis Hamilton returned after a serious bout with COVID-19, not feeling his best. I guess there's another point that was interesting there, which is that Lewis's return sent George Russell back to the Williams, where he finished 15th after very nearly winning last weekend in the Mercedes. Andrew, am I missing anything interesting here?
No. By all accounts, it was an exceedingly dreary affair. I blame the circuit. It was just badly designed, and unfortunately, it is what it is. Clearly, they gave an awful lot of money to Bernie. Now they're giving an awful lot of money to Liberty Media, who, by God, certainly need it after the season they've had. But having said all of that, I'm delighted that Max finally came good. I mean, we all know that he is good. And yes, I do feel sorry for Russell. Extraordinary that the 3 points he managed to put together in the whole of the season came courtesy of Lewis's car when he turned out to be a super sub.
And yeah, you're absolutely right about blaming the circuit, because we've never had good racing at Sakhir. I'm sorry, in Abu Dhabi. And you mentioned a minute ago that the organizers were now paying big money to Liberty Media, who could use it after this season. And we've talked about this a little bit before. But back when the Australian GP was canceled at the last minute, the entire series was in shambles. And somehow Liberty pulled out a full 17-race season. Abu Dhabi was an unworthy conclusion to what was a remarkable effort on Liberty's part and the team's part. And when you think about it, despite all the countries they visited, all the people that moved around, you know, we had three drivers who tested positive for COVID-19 and missed, I think, between them four races. But it was an astonishingly smooth running season in the final analysis.
Yes, and also we did. There were some tremendous highlights. I mean, Pierre Gasly comes to mind, and Lance Stroll's 35 laps in the lead, pole position, and in the pouring rain, and they're leading for 35 laps.
Checo Perez's first victory after 190 races.
Absolutely. So there were highlights over and, you know, way, you know, not, it's not just the fact that Lewis, of course, is now the most successful. I'm sure he'll be Sir by the 1st of January. Well deserved, I hasten to add. But, you know, it was nice that some other guys also got on the top of the podium. And I sincerely hope that next year, Max in particular, will give him a very, very hard time.
Well, we'll get to some predictions later in the podcast. But I guess we're dismissing the race here. For the sake of completeness, I should say that Mercedes' Valtteri Bottas finished second behind Verstappen. Hamilton was in third, not feeling good at all. And Red Bull's Alex Albon finished fourth, which was, I think, pretty much unquestionably his best overall result of the season in terms of going through practice, going through qualifying. He wasn't that competitive in the race, but he came alive in the very end. We saw some of his wheel-to-wheel skills, which nobody's ever questioned. And I guess in a way it was the best time for him to show off those skills, although at least part of the rumor mill is strongly suggesting that we're going to hear Red Bull has hired Perez to replace him next season. In any case, the McLarens finished fifth and sixth, clinching third place in the Constructors' title. Great news for them. But the Ferraris finished 13th and 14th and ended up sixth in the team's standings. Its worst results in 40 years. Way back, you have to go back to 1980 to find that. Overall, it was another unforgettable weekend for the Scuderia, but this was the last race at Sebastian Vettel after six seasons. And we saw a lot of respect and camaraderie between him and teammate Charles Leclerc. Charles was wearing a helmet that read Danke Seb. The two drivers swapped helmets and sort of sung each other's praises after the race. And I guess most notably, Vettel sang a song over the radio on the cooldown lap after hiding a lyrics sheet inside his car somewhere during the race. And regardless, Vettel has had a couple years of very challenging drives, making mistakes, and he was totally demolished by Leclerc this year. But I think it goes to show something you said in the last podcast, that whether or not he's at the height of his racing abilities anymore, he's a fantastic human being, and he's beloved by the team. Every team he's gone to, actually, whether that was Toro Rosso, Red Bull, and now Ferrari, and presumably he'll fit in great at Aston Martin.
Yes, and of course he got, if you like, a standing ovation. I mean, the entire team clapped him and saluted him before the race and after the race. And I'm sure there wasn't a dry eye in the house. It was beautiful. He's a great champion. Let's not kid each other. Nobody wins four championships in anything. And I'll be fascinated to see whether Mr. Stroll Senior's hunch on hiring him will turn out to be a good idea or a better idea. Will it be a new Seb? Will it be Seb Mark II, if you like?
Well, let's return to that in a moment. When we look at a bunch of changes that are happening next year. Sticking to this season for a moment, this is normally the time in the last podcast where I would say, let's look back at the highs and lows of the season. But I feel like we've spent too much time looking at the lows already. It's just been a wretched year in so many ways. Starting at the second race of the season when the two cars collided in the Styrian Grand Prix, and maybe not culminating, but also notable that they both retired from their home race at Monza. So I guess I will, instead of looking at that, I'll ask, with the regulations mostly unchanged for next season, do you think we'll see a stronger Ferrari next year? Or are they still going to be struggling for sixth place?
Maybe not sixth, maybe fifth. I cannot see them winning. I cannot see them beating Mercedes, because as long as the engines are as is, they will always be half a second to a second slower than, let us say, Lewis in the Mercedes. For instance, the Hungaroring would favor them up to a point, as would Monaco. So some of the twisty, slower circuits may help. As far as Monza is concerned, I would suggest that they have absolutely no chance. And as far as everybody's talking about 2022, as though these amazingly, I don't know what to say, all the cars will be redesigned, it will be easier to do this and that and the other. I still think it's a load of rubbish. The best drivers, you know, such as Hamilton, will conquer as long as he stays in Formula One. And that, of course, is a $64 question. $64,000 million, whatever question.
Well, it has to be the $64 million question.
Yes, bearing in mind the amounts of money involved. It is going to be fascinating when he does retire, because there are a lot of young tigers there, but they're not out of the cage as long as Lewis is dominating the show. He's the ringmaster.
And as we've said before, Charles Leclerc looks to be one of those young tigers, as you call them. I didn't want to talk about the lows of Ferrari's season, but there were two highs I wanted to talk about. One of which was, of course, that they became the first team to reach 1,000 World Championship Grands Prix. They did that at the Tuscan GP at Mugello, one of three races held in Italy this season. And with all that attention, it would have been fantastic if they had been competitive this year. They simply weren't. But the other high, I think, is just Leclerc's performance. Not specifically that he scored two podiums, which should have been three, if not for his sliding wide on the final lap in Turkey, but that he out-qualified Vettel, the four-time world champion, 13-4, finished with 98 points to Vettel's 33. And I think the general feeling is he delivered the maximum that the Ferrari was capable of delivering. In his tribute, Vettel called him the future of Ferrari. And of course, Charles has a long-term contract, but I think this season in particular, he really proved that that contract was well-deserved.
Yes, of course, the fact that there is hiatus at the top of Ferrari as well at the moment doesn't help. Because as you know, and the whole world knows, Mr. Camilleri, at the age of 65, decided that either he's had enough or he was pushed immaterial. He's no longer there. And I honestly, much as I love the team, and number of times I've been to the factory, and 25 years at Forza, so nobody can say I don't love Ferrari, but I feel that they desperately need someone like Luca di Montezemolo, who really, really motivated them like nobody before or since.
You raise an interesting point. We don't yet know why Camilleri left. It was just cited as being personal reasons, and the chairman of the group that owns Ferrari, John Elkann, is stepping in temporarily, but they'll need somebody else to fill that role. And the New York Times reported a couple days ago that the two guys in the running were Apple board members. So there's a possibility that they are going in completely the opposite direction of what you just suggested, which is going with someone like Marchionne, who is a car guy and has worked in the automotive industry in one field or another. Montezemolo obviously came out of Fiat and was a team manager. I'm not sure which way I lean. I think that Camilleri didn't seem to have any influence whatsoever over the Formula One team. We saw him at a few races, but whereas Marchionne, for instance, brought in Leclerc to challenge Vettel and was constantly talking about it, Camilleri never popped up at all. So I think I agree with you and that it would be great to have a car person back in, but when you're looking at the health of the company as a whole, I'm not sure that it matters that much.
Funny you should say that. I didn't want to butt in, but the Roma has been very well received. They're building something like 10,000 cars. There is a waiting list. They didn't have to drop any prices or anything like that. I mean, compared to companies like McLaren, who are desperate to, as they say in the industry, shift the metal, they can't. And Aston have yet to produce their SUV. To be fair, Ferrari's SUVs has yet to come out as well. But with what they've got, I think they've got a very strong lineup of product, and which is just as well, because otherwise we wouldn't have anything to write about in Forza.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, whether or not Camilleri was a real figurehead in the way Marchionne or certainly di Montezemolo was, even if he was simply advancing Marchionne's agenda, even during this crazy year, they still have introduced, three or four new models. They've started production on new models like the SF90. The Formula One team needs help, but they, mid-season, they restructured the technical team. Clearly, they're still spending the money on it. They've shuffled their driver lineup. So with luck, they'll bounce back to competitiveness again.
Yes, well, we'll have to wait till March of next year to find out. Obviously, we would desperately like to report on their success. In the meantime, of course, it's Mercedes all the way, just for once chased by Max. I suppose this is what it is, and I don't think 2021 will change dramatically. But what is astonishing is the growth of the number of people are now following Formula One is absolutely staggering. If Lewis turns up anywhere, a million people look at it on Instagram. I mean, 50 years ago, they were driving for $50 or $60, and it was a minority sport. And now, of course, it's huge. It's tremendous what Bernie has achieved over the years. And well done to Liberty, who really know how to hype it. because, you know, you have them. You literally have Formula One coming out of absolutely every single media that's ever been discovered. And they're playing the old races, and they have T-shirts and sweatshirts, and there are lots of movies being made about Formula One. That's the other thing, is part of the upsurge, of course, is what Netflix have been doing, and I think Netflix are doing it again. There is a Senna movie in the works, and also a Ferrari movie in the works. So it's like an avalanche, if you like.
Going back to something you said a minute ago, that you predicted Ferrari's resurgence would be dependent on its engine power, I agree. That is the biggest thing that's been holding them back this year. And as I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, they're going to introduce an all-new engine for next season. And if that puts them back even within range of Mercedes or Red Bull, they could suddenly be back in the top three completely out of the blue. And relatedly, that would, of course, boost the fortunes of the Ferrari-powered teams, Alfa Romeo and Haas. And we just heard this week that Ferrari's chief designer, Simone di Resta, will actually be shifting over to Haas next year, which I don't think is any coincidence. I don't think it's a coincidence that Mick Schumacher, newly crowned F2 world champion, son of seven-time world champion Michael, will be there at the same time as well. To me, it looks like Ferrari's trying to create, let's call it a real junior team, in the same way Red Bull has AlphaTauri. And if that goes according to plan, that can only benefit both teams to have more support, more connection between Haas and Ferrari, and to have a place to put its junior drivers like Schumacher, potentially like Callum Ilott, potentially like Robert Schwartzman, all of whom were competing and winning this past season in the lower formula.
And, in case anyone's missed it, there's a very nice, or maybe they're too young to have been readers in 2007, but we've just reprinted a very, very nice article on Michael Schumacher, and we added some new bits to it. And those who are not familiar with all the wonderful things that he had done, I would suggest that you read that particular article.
The 7,000-plus members of the Ferrari Club of America, the world's largest Ferrari club, enjoy exciting track events, an internationally recognized concours d'élégance, and a wide variety of year-round social activities. The members of our 16 active regions and 52 chapters throughout the US and Canada also receive our monthly news bulletin, plus Prancing Horse, our full-color quarterly magazine. Our tremendous program of membership benefits even includes discounts at authorized Ferrari dealerships and selected retailers. So join today. Visit us online now at ferrariclubofamerica.org.
Looking at what's changing next year, I guess the big story is Sebastian Vettel's move to Racing Point, which will be renamed Aston Martin. Racing Point really didn't deliver what was expected or feared or whatever with the pink Mercedes this season, but I think it'll be interesting to see how the team improves with Sebastian's arrival. As you've mentioned before, Lawrence Stroll, who owns the team, the father of Lance Stroll, who was retained when Perez was pushed out, is a huge fan of Vettel and views him as needing a world champion to take the team to the next level. I personally have no doubt that Vettel will be faster than Stroll, who has certainly had his moments this year, but as we saw in Abu Dhabi, had a terrible race where Perez, before his transmission failed, was just tearing through the field. Do you want to make any predictions about what Vettel, will we see Vettel 2.0 next year? And even if we don't, will he still be good enough to beat Lance Stroll? And will he still help the team move forward?
Well, I'm a little bit concerned about young Stroll's intellectual abilities, because he gave an interview to the BBC in which he said, well, there are worse things in the world than being the son of a billionaire, which is true. It's perfectly true. It's in print, BBC interview, but it seems so unbelievably insensitive, especially in the middle of the COVID epidemic, that I wish he would engage brain first before saying these rather silly things.
Be to that as it may, will he be a suitable teammate for Vettel, or is he just going to be a distant also-ran next season against him?
I would love to see, not just because I'm not a huge fan, but I would love to see Vettel come back as Vettel Mark II or Mark III or whatever. Having him in the team is very good. They switching the name to Aston Martin is brilliant. Of course, Mr. Stroll owns the factory as well. I do find that, you know, I mean, it's a very British company. They've got a new plant in Wales and the new car is coming along. I just hope they don't run out of money. And on that subject, I must mention that McLaren have just got $250 million from an American investor, which is helping them a great deal. And of course, having done rather well in the last race, they're also getting extra millions from Liberty. There was some talk during the season that they might go bust because they couldn't sell any road cars. They couldn't get them out of the factory, and there were no buyers.
Yeah, the last race in Abu Dhabi that pushed them into third place might have added $10 million to their coffers. So you can't get a better result from a single race than that. Continuing with what's changing next year, mentioned Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin will be at Haas and will be saying goodbye or have said goodbye to both Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen. It's unlikely we'll ever see them again in Formula One. I think that's also the case with AlphaTauri's Daniel Kvyat, who will probably be replaced by F2 driver Yuki Tsunoda. I mentioned that Perez is rumored to be replacing Albon, who'd be demoted to a testing and reserve driver. But even if he doesn't get that seat, Perez says he'll be back. Lewis Hamilton hasn't yet signed a contract with Mercedes, but nobody doubts that won't happen in the next few weeks, which means, just like happened in Abu Dhabi, Russell will be stuck at Williams for another season. But there are two other driver moves that are happening that I wanted to talk about. And the first one you've already touched upon, one of which is Fernando Alonso returning to Renault, which will be rebranded Alpine, which is the road car company's performance brand, kind of like BMW M or Mercedes-AMG. Alonso is highly regarded as one of the top drivers of this age, being right up there with Schumacher and Hamilton. And you mentioned earlier that it was wonderful to see him back out there, but at age 39, do you think he's going to deliver when he's in the Renault? Or are we going to see, for instance, a repeat of the sort of tragic McLaren Honda years that we all suffered through?
Well, he can be very surly when he's not winning. He's not a gracious loser, let's put it that way. Having said that, it was wonderful to see him in this Renault R25. And the way he was throwing that car around was absolutely magnificent. And also, you may have noticed that for the first time in a long time, people actually had to cover their ears because of that glorious sound of that engine, which, of course, is now history. I think it's a great shame. I personally, that car, it sounded good. It was nimble. He obviously drove it with relish, and it's not a matter of nostalgia. It was just wonderful to see.
So how do you think he'll do in the new era, though? Because that car that he was driving, as good as it sounded, was not nearly as fast as the car he'll get into next season.
Well, he's participating in a test session very, very shortly, I understand.
Young driver session, which is ironic for a 39-year-old two-time world champion, but that's...
It is a bit. Obviously, Liberty desperately need him because he's, you know, because of the Latin American, you know, the South American market. He speaks Spanish, speaks Portuguese, you know, he's good looking. He's, you know, former champion. He ticks all the boxes from a promotional point of view. So you have Vettel, if you like, for the German market. You have Hamilton for the British market, or Australia, or New Zealand, or Canada, whatever. And of course, you have Stroll for the Canadian market.
The other driver I wanted to talk about was Carlos Sainz, who's driving for McLaren this season, finished one spot behind Lando Norris at the race in Abu Dhabi, and he will be lining up against Charles Leclerc. Sainz came in, was actually a Red Bull Junior driver, was partnered with Max Verstappen for a while, didn't get the boot up to Red Bull from what was then Toro Rosso when Verstappen did. And he's been kind of under the radar, creeping his way up, and the move up to Ferrari is his big chance. We've seen him as a fast and steady driver who's definitely shown moments of brilliance, but I'm not sure we have a real handle on how good he is. Do you have any guesses as to how he will perform at Ferrari when compared to Leclerc?
I think it's going to be a Hamilton-Bottas situation, and I think he'll be a nice, reliable number two, is the way I see it. I'm sure he doesn't see it that way, but I do.
I think he's certainly going to have a tough time, muscling Leclerc out of the way, given that Leclerc has both a long-term contract, was a Ferrari junior driver, and has already been established in the team for 2 years. And furthermore, is just beloved by one and all there, apparently.
Yes, he's immensely popular. He's there all the time, of course, lives in Monaco, which is the way he drives. It's about 3 hours away. Although there are various stories about, as they say, the olden days when Gilles Villeneuve and Jody Scheckter were racing to get to the factory, well under 3 hours, of course, from Monaco. And Jody turned up a minute later and Gilles uttered the immortal words, "What kept you?" So these are the sort of things that, of course, being a little bit older than our editor, I remember with great relish. And before I forget, I must apologize to a lady in Britain who I know listens to all our podcasts. And when I talked about the anoraks, those fanatical British supporters who turn up on the Wednesday and stay in tents and eat sausages and drink beer, no, I was not referring to her. I was not trying to offend her in any shape or form. But the anoraks are there, and God willing, they will be there next year. And hopefully Silverstone, where incidentally they've just named a straight after Lewis Hamilton, which I think is a beautiful touch. There's a pent-up demand. And I think if tickets go on sale, I think it's going to be a sellout. It will be a sellout by the end of January.
So looking ahead to next season, certainly I too hope that we get fans back in the grandstands where we had them at maybe, three races this season in the end? So this year, as in years past, Hamilton and Mercedes won both titles. And I at least believe that they have to be the odds-on favorites for next year. Assuming we agree about that, who do you predict will finish second and third next year?
I'm absolutely certain that Red Bull will be second again. No doubt at all. My wish, if you like, apart from Ferrari's success, is that George Russell should score at least 1 point in the Williams. It is so heartbreaking to watch this once great team. I mean, without a single point from 17 races, that has got to be pretty demoralizing. And I do hope they can pick themselves up off the floor and bounce back and put a smile on long-suffering Frank Williams's face. But my goodness, he suffered plenty over the years.
So Mercedes, Red Bull, and who's in third place in constructors?
I think it's going to be a shootout between Renault and McLaren.
And driver's side, Hamilton wins. Who's second? Is it Bottas for Verstappen?
I would put my money on Max for second place. I would love to see him. I've got nothing against Bottas, but I would love to see, you know, actually, I don't care. People say, who should, for years, people said to me, who would you like to win? It doesn't matter as long as it's a good race.
Oh, I agree completely with you on that one. And I think we saw that at Sakhir. We all wanted George Russell to win, but Sergio Perez taking the win like that is no consolation prize at all.
But it was a fairy tale for Sergio. So I love fairy tales. I mean, it was okay. It wasn't George's fairy tale. It was Sergio. But I love these. Instead of all, you know, my daughter would say to me, so who came second? There was no question of who was winning. Who came second? And it's sad when that's how a conversation starts.
Yes. I agree with you that Red Bull will finish second again next year, although I think if Perez replaces Albon, the points tally will be much closer, but I don't expect Mercedes to be beaten at all. As for third place, I think I'm going to bet on, like you, I'm going to bet on McLaren, partially because they'll have Daniel Ricciardo in the car, but probably more so because they'll have Mercedes power next year. As for the driver's side, I too think Verstappen will beat Bottas. So we're very much in agreement for once.
That's not good. But also, before we forget, may I just say thank you to our listeners in 47 or 48 countries now, all over the world, from St. Bas to St. Lucia to Morocco to, of course, our faithfuls in Britain and the United States and Canada. And thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Forza F1 podcast. Next up, we hope, Australia 2021.
Thanks for listening this week. If you like the podcast, check out our website, forzamag.com. That's forza-mag.com, where you can subscribe to our newsletter for the latest Ferrari news and reviews. You can follow us on social media at forzamag, forzamag, no hyphen.